The lifeboat had been adrift for at least a full day. The two girls did not know what to do. They had screamed for help until they could speak no more, and then they had wept copious tears, growled at each other, snapped at each other, and finally consoled each other. But in all that time, the one terror they did not dare speak of, lest by speaking it aloud, they make it true. No help would be forthcoming. They were lost at sea. And it would be hours before someone realized they were missing. Thankfully, there was a small cache of provisions stowed within the bench box of the lifeboat, but it wasn't much. There were kits for purifying seawater into potable water, but neither of the girls knew anything about how to put the strange items together, or knew much about desalination. The items to them were just what they appeared to be: a rag, a silver bowl, a collapsible wooden frame, a small corked vial of blue tablets, and a mirror. They might as well have been the components of an erector set. There were some dried cracker-like biscuits that they half-heartedly munched on, but found them tasteless and hardly satisfying. Neither of them had much of an appetite after their ordeal. The wind was cold, but the sun overhead threatened with blistering heat. They pulled the tarpaulin cover over the half-open area from the front bow to the midship rails and oar stocks and took shade under it. By and by, they fell asleep, having little else to do but hope and pray the ship would turn back. A search party sent out, and they would eventually be found before they died of thirst, hunger, or exposure. Sleeping fitfully in each other's arms, trying to stay warm as best they could, they never saw the opening in the sky and sea, and never knew they had drifted through the strange glowing portal out from the open sea of the surface world into the waters of another world entirely. It was only a matter of a few hours more before they were awakened by the rocking and chop of the boat lifting over the swells and spinning lazily into the deepening troughs between the frothy wave crest that they knew something was wrong. They could be swamped and capsized if nothing was done to orient the small lifeboat. The oars were long and heavy, and up until that moment the girls had been afraid to try lifting them out of their stocks into the rowlocks. But they had to orient the bow, and water was already pouring over the sides with each dip and pitch of the boat. Shakily, they crawled towards the midship bench, weakened from fitful sleep, growing hunger, and a disturbing lack of fresh water. The darker-haired girl rose up, bracing herself by clutching the canvas extending from the transom. The younger, fair, red-headed girl scrambled towards the bracket, holding the long wooden oar on the port side of the boat, just as the craft crested a rising wave.
"Land! Land!"
the older girl squealed and screamed. The water and crackling liquid noises of the waves drowned out the other girl's words into nonsensical gibberish and squeals. The younger girl lost balance and fell into the sloshing water in the bottom of the boat, bruising her shins and arms.
"Ow! Ow!" she cried. "Help me, Becca!" "Murray, there's land over there!"
the elder cried, trying to steady herself against the pitching boat.
"Get the oar! I'll get the other one!" "I was trying to, big dummy, and I fell and hurt my legs." "Murray, don't you see? We're saved. There may be people there who can help us. Come on."
With that, the older girl, identified as Becca by the younger, bent down and crawled through the sloshing water to the starboard bracket, holding the other oar and tugged at the long paddle. Meanwhile, the younger, Murray, tugged at the oar on the port bracket.
"It won't come out," she wailed, gritting her teeth. "Becca, help me. It won't come out."
Just then, a swelling wave of water poured over the port gunwale, drenching the red-headed girl. She coughed and sputtered, shivering from the chill of the water, trying to wipe her eyes, but losing her balance again. The frustration of her circumstance overwhelmed her, and she started crying.
"Becca, help."
The older Becca lost patience.
"Quit being such a baby, Murray,"
She had pulled her oar out and laid it across the midship bench. She sloshed past Murray, gripped the port side oar, and jerked upward, but the oar did not come loose. Gathering her legs under her, she planted her feet and gripped the oar with both hands, just as another wave poured over the side, drenching both Murray and Becca. Becca coughed and sputtered water. Gasping for breath, which irritated her, and she lashed out angrily at Murray as if she had caused the wave to hit her.
Get out of the way, you weakling baby. There's land over there, and all we need to do is get the oars out, and we'll be able to row towards it without sinking first. Now it's not the time to cry. I'm not a weakling baby,
Murray protested through her tears.
Stop being such a meanie. We wouldn't be out here if you hadn't insisted we play pirates.
Shut up, you. Becca turned on her, raising a bald fist at her.
All you ever wanted to play was with your dollies. Grow up, you sissy baby. Ship up or ship out.
Murray's face puckered into an angry pout. She wanted to give Becca a good clout in the mug, but she was much smaller than her, so she bit her lip and reached over to grab the stuck oar with Becca. On three, Becca commanded, acting as if she was the pirate captain she had pretended to be.
One, two.
Murray yanked upward and the oar popped loose of its bracket, and she triumphantly cried out,
Three!
Becca, expecting Murray's effort to have joined hers on her own declaration of the word three, lost balance and fell backward into the sloshing water on her buttocks, expelled a loud when she struck the bench seat. The hard plunk had bruised her tailbone, and she teared up, but bit her bottom lip, trying hard not to let Murray see her cry.
Who's the weakling baby now?
Murray snuffled, wiping salty spray from her eyes and cheeks.
I'll get you for that,
Becca growled, turning and rising, reaching for the oar she had freed before. Just then the boat pitched and spun, angling down another wave, but did not dip to gulp the water at the bottom of the trough. It canted, throwing both Murray and Becca off balance again, and they hung on to the gunwale railings to keep from tumbling overboard. The oars clacked against each other and formed an X across the boat. The boat seesawed again, and the oars slid to parallel positions, clattering again. They put the oars in the oar locks and fastened the ends together so that the oars could be operated in tandem. When the paddles were dipped into the water, the two girls were thrown forward over the midship bench and fell towards the transom and canvas cover. With a shout of surprise, the two girls tumbled headlong into the canvas, tangled together, but no worse for the experience. Becca started laughing, and Murray couldn't help herself. She never could hold on to a mad for very long, and together the girls laughed at the silliness of their predicament.
Do you know how to row a boat?
Murray asked.
I can sing it, but there's no gently down the stream here.
Guess not. Murray wrinkled her brow.
How are we gonna do it?
Don't know, Becca said, rising up off the canvas tarp. But we're gonna figure it out. How hard can it be? 2 hours of struggle against the choppy sea soon taught them the answer.